Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe, Gateway Central Iowa's premier good food store, and brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate, personalized service. If you're looking for quality foods with a community focus, check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial land, Joe has been covering all of that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Contact Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, thanks to the Des Moines Iowa Session for our bumper music. And I'm delighted to welcome to the program Maureen McHugh. Maureen, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. Well, welcome. Thanks for making the trek down here from Eastern Iowa. So speaking of treks, I have a big announcement today. I am planning to spend the next 5 weeks, starting the 29th, walking around Iowa. I call it my Save America March, and I hope people join me. The goal is to recognize the reality that our democracy is in deep peril right now, and that we have a lot more in common with each other than we often think, given the kind of vitriol that social media and some of the insightful comments from certain people, you know, generate. I mean, I think we have a lot in common, and I want to kind of reclaim that image, that understanding, and to see what we can do to prevent the country from disintegrating. Am I off my rocker here? Or you think I think this is a good idea?
Well, if anybody knows about walking and talking, clearly you do. I always have some questions about this sort of, you know, supposed spontaneous kind of thing. My understanding is you want to meet with people in their homes and you want them to be able to put you up for a night and bring in guests, neighbors, whatever. And I was just wondering how you do that as you're walking. How are you knowing where to stop? How are you knowing, you know, anticipating what an audience will be? How does it get set up?
Well, those are really, really good questions. And my answer is, well, a lot of this is unraveling, coming together on faith more than really, really solid organizing. I mean, I've done the marches where you have to do solid organizing. That is especially the case where you have big crowds of people, like when we had 50 people doing the climate march, or back in 1986, my first round with marching. 600 people doing the Great Peace March, but yeah. You know, I walked from Southeast Iowa to Northwest Iowa back in 2015, following the Dakota Access Pipeline route, and that came together pretty spontaneously, and it worked pretty well. So that's more of my model. And again, it's not the perfect model. The one you described is probably probably a better plan, but I'm just one guy.
Yeah,
trying to do what he can. You know, I mean, everybody's trying to do what they can right now, and sometimes we actually agree on what needs to happen. But I think most people would agree that dissolving the country is not good. Another civil war would be a really, really bad situation. And I have friends who disagree with that. And maybe you've heard the Jeffrey Weiss, is the DMAC professor's proposal, yeah. that it's time to divide the country. Divorce, U.S. divorce, Mississippi River being the dividing line.
Yeah.
Republicans get one side, Democrats get the other. Independents make their way where they want. I'm not a fan of that idea.
Well, I'm not a fan of that idea per se, but We are pretty divided. There's just absolutely no doubt about that. And there are a lot of guns, and that worries me. And as a woman, I would be terrified to just walk up to anybody anywhere, although I really hate the fact that we're all afraid of strangers, and I love nothing more than interacting with the people with their dogs, with their kids. I mean, those are two of the things that do unite us pretty much without question. However, you know, going up to a stranger's house, I mean, we've all heard those stories about being shot at the door because somebody doesn't know you, and that's one of those things that certainly sure. frightens me. Although I have done little tours around my neighborhood, being out in the country. I don't exactly have a neighborhood, but I have the kind that you have because there are Trump signs and so on. And I've gone and talked to people about solar. And I have been very surprised, pleasantly surprised, to find that people did just talk to me. And sometimes it was the dog barking that brought them out. And they just start to talk, and they're not particularly defensive or upset. They're just happy to find out why you're there.
Yeah, and so Trump sign and a solar panel. And
yes.
Okay, so that's a nice combination. since Trump is trying to destroy solar and wind energy.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How would did you have any conversation to the extent that you could determine why they supported Trump and how they felt about his attacks on clean energy?
No, that's what I'm saying is it was so neutral.
Yeah.
At worst, you know, somebody would quickly say, I doubt we're interested. And maybe that's a Trump supporter, or maybe that's somebody who can't afford solar. Mm. I don't know. But several people said, well, that's really interesting. I would like to learn more. Or what was really even more interesting to me was, well, if you're organizing things around here, could we get more trash pickup? Could we have other services that we need? And so that was a surprise to me to find out that there were these other things that people were perfectly willing to talk to me who they'd never seen before, you know, about their concerns. We talked about roofing. We talked about insulation. We talked about trash.
Well,
it was interesting.
Those are the issues that unite us, roofs and trash pickup.
Yeah.
I mean, really, we and beyond that, I mean, security, a good life for our kids, a good educational system, you know, a decent healthcare system. There are so many things that really bring us together. And yet, I mean, tell me what you think the problem is. But to me, there are
the problem.
Well, there are three primary reasons why we are so divided, and one of them is the politicians. And that's a problem on both sides.
Yeah,
Democrats and Republicans like to divide. They feel they can better conquer if they divide. The media, better ratings if they can create some sense of tension and division. Social media, which is,
it also flourishes on division
and
acrimony.
I have a post up about the teacher in Oskaloosa. This has made national news, but there's a mid-sized town in Iowa, Oskaloosa, where a teacher was fired for posting one Nazi down. And I agreed with the Oskaloosa school board, who voted unanimously to fire him, because I think that's divisive. I think it promotes violence. I mean, you saying, first of all, calling Charlie Kirk a Nazi, that's a fair discussion. But to say that, to imply that his killing was good and one down, let's keep going, is really inappropriate. You know, maybe in certain lines of work you can get away with that, but as a leader, and teachers are definitely leaders, I think that's going too far. Maybe you disagree.
I don't strongly disagree. I worry about the surveillance state-ness of it.
Yeah.
Because he was writing on a private line, is my understanding. I agree that given the acrimony around many aspects of our educational system, the last thing we need to do is to contribute to that. But at the same time, the idea that everyone's language now has to be so carefully monitored, self, incrimination before you write, so to speak, whereas on the other side, there is none of that monitoring. There is none of that control. And that's the scary part for me. I really do not have any regard for somebody who writes something like Last or First Nazi Down. You understand what drives people at this point because we are so divided, you know, to say things like that. But as a teacher, I can't help but also, you know, being sympathetic to your position while at the same time feeling the frustration that so many have at this point. And the idea that gun violence is so out of control. There's very little talk about that. It's all talk about language right now, which is vicious and denigrating in so many ways. But words don't kill, you know.
Well, words can inspire.
Words can inspire
bad behavior.
But the two have to. You can't just talk about words if you're not going to talk about the guns. Because nowadays everybody is picking up a gun because they're so available, so readily available to anybody who wants one.
Even someone with severe mental illness can acquire a gun, and even
anybody
acquire a
can.
Gun that is basically a weapon of war. I mean,
yes,
you know, self-defense is one thing, hunting is another thing. You know, the sport of target shooting is another thing. But when you've got guns that are capable of releasing, you know, incredible destruction with just the pull of a trigger.
Yeah.
You know, that's disturbing. No, I
can't argue with that. In fact, you know, I just, it pains me. It pains me terribly to see somebody being killed for their political ideas as opposed to being on trial. But now we don't even have trials. I mean, we have a court that's completely controlled now by one side of this divide, and people are making up laws and rules and following or not following, and that in and of itself is another concern. So I think this is a problem with many facets. If you're going to take it as one example, you can come in from multiple points.
Well, I my hope is that with 5 weeks of you know, I mean, yeah, sure, I'll still have my phone with me and be able to access the things that I normally access to communicate, email, and whatnot, but it's going to be mostly an opportunity for direct conversation and dialogue with people, and maybe I will learn that the most important issues are roofs and trash pickup. I believe they probably are, but
water may come up in
water
there.
Water may. Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, that's
another
one. Now, years ago, I'd organized a short. By short, I mean 85-mile walk from Eastern Iowa to Des Moines, And we were targeted by a group that was, you know, kind of an attack group that was financed by the company promoting the Dakota Access Pipeline. And they put out some incredibly hateful stuff about us, false and hateful. Mm-hmm. And it got local people all riled up. And they were buzzing us on the road. They were flipping us off. They were threatening us. When we got to our first campsite, we were ringed by Confederate flags, you know. And the next morning, you know, we went to bed at 8:30. We were all tired. Next morning, the neighbor came over and apologized to us and said, you know, if I had, you know, I believe these things, but you guys seem pretty nice. And and then, you know, and we're still friends, me and that guy, you know. And you know, he's kind of right wing, you know. He doesn't really believe in the climate change theory, as he called it, you know. But we agreed on water quality and agreed on some other things. And so I think when you start having those conversations, maybe you'll find that common ground that allows you to move toward a political solution that's not going to destroy our democracy. And I think right now, my perception is that Trump is hell-bent on destroying American democracy. He's not calling it that.
Well, he's had a head start. I mean, that's another whole discussion that we don't have, because we don't talk about Citizens United hardly at all.
Or the Patriot Act.
Yeah, your own, you know, representative, quote unquote, if you have enough money. And so where does that lead us? Yeah. Who's making the decisions?
That's a really important point, because I think some people would want to blame Trump for the fall, a sliding into authoritarianism. But I think you and I would agree that it goes back a lot further.
Yeah, yeah.
And Citizen United is an example. But the Patriot Act, that was signed under George W. Bush after 9/11 and then reauthorized by you know, Barack Obama.
So, yeah. I mean, we could go, you know, quid pro quo on every one of these levels, you know, who started what, who contained it, who maintained it, who altered it slightly, who strengthened it. I mean, we have a lot of problems. I mean, the very first one is we have 50 states, two senators for each state, which is, to me, the most absurd idea. We have two senators in California. We have two senators in Rhode Island. Yeah. And so the representative government idea is even itself questionable at this point.
We could have a long conversation about that. I mean, looking at the UN, I mean, the UN, the structure of the UN with the Security Council is really...
Oh, okay, there's a whole other discussion.
But you have even small countries have a vote. Uh-huh. China has a vote. Uh-huh. You know, Moldova has a vote.
Yeah.
You know, so there's some, that's kind of the rationale behind each state having, you know, one legislative chamber based on population and one based on just the fact that it is a state. But you could argue that maybe there are states that are so small. They made sense back in the 1700s. Maybe Rhode Island doesn't make sense anymore. I don't know. Maybe, sorry, all my friends from Rhode Island. I'm not picking on them specifically. But
no, I'm saying our whole notion of representative government has a lot of pricks and problems with it, including how now they're going to gerrymander for the House of Representatives as well.
Yeah, that's unprecedented, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think we've seen a lot of trends in recent decades that point toward a more authoritarian, centralized government. But what's happening now is on steroids.
Yeah, and it's just the speed with which the roadblocks are being knocked over by very big, heavy tanks.
Hey, we got to take a short break. With me today, folks, Maureen McHugh, a doctor, also with Physicians for Social Responsibility, and an instructor at the University of Iowa. You wear a bunch of hats.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well.
And a mom.
This is Ed Fallon with you on the Fallon Forum. Back in a minute.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land. Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Catholic Peace Ministry, whose focus is on nuclear disarmament, the war between Israel and Hamas, the war in Ukraine, and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. All right, Maureen McHugh with me today, folks. And was it last week or the week before? I put out a piece...
2 weeks ago.
Talking about Irish democracy, which was... I'd never heard it called that, even though I'm deeply enmeshed in Irish history and life. But the I understood what he was talking about.
Basically, did I mention my granddaughter's going to college in Ireland, in Dublin?
No.
Yeah.
Trinity?
No, it has
UCD?
A different name. Giblin or... No,
Giblin?
I can't remember.
Giblet?
So, it's a term I had never heard before. Griffith. Griffith.
Oh, Griffith, okay.
Like in the house of Harry Potter.
Sure. Maybe she's going to be studying witchcraft?
Well, she's studying psychology. Depends on how you feel about that.
So anyway, we were reviewing a piece by Chris Armitage, a piece called We Live in a Fascist Nation, What Now? And my feeling was that, no, we don't, but we're heading that way. We're heading toward an authoritarian state. And when that happens, we will have lost our democracy, which is, again, why I'm going to be spending 5 weeks walking around Iowa having those conversations. But, he talks about, makes a case for what's called Irish democracy. I think the point is that violence is not necessarily the right way to address political, liabilities.
That's a good start. However, we're a country built on violence, and we're really exaggerating our lead standing. I mean, we were built on annihilating the native population. We were built on slavery. We've been maintaining our ability to extract materials from the rest of the world, not on pleasant grounds in many cases. In fact, we're, now threatening to take over Greenland, threatening at times to make Canada our 52nd state.
51st.
Who's the 50? Sorry. Yeah. The 51st would be Greenland.
Oh,
the 52nd
would
be Canada.
Okay.
But, I mean, people tend to forget that when they start talking about it as if it's something that just popped up in the last few years. Violence is our middle name, and the longer we forget that and the more we take it for granted, the worse things get. I mean, nonviolence, democracy have to come together. The very notion of people coming together to elect their representatives, the very notion that we have a legal system, all of these things depend on believing in nonviolence. And so that's where I think the conversation almost has to start, is what do we understand is democracy? We can all vote, but if you don't have laws, if you don't have representatives who care what people voted for, I mean, how many times have we heard in the last few years that the people will have a referendum and the ruling, whatever, governor, mayor, whomever, says, I don't care, we're not going to do that. And so we already are
then,
so
well, then
far
they get
down.
Taken to court, and ideally the court officials say, no, you're, the judge says, no, you're out of line. This is not in keeping with the statutes of this city, state, nation, and nor is it in keeping with the Constitution. And that's happening a lot at all levels.
What happened with the women who voted, to be able to receive abortions? It was in Missouri. And they just said, no, we're not going to follow that. We're going to go our own way.
And was there a lawsuit
I'm not sure what the end story is. Yeah. I think it may be a continuing story. And women are still obviously working for their rights.
Yeah,
but
sure. And now more than ever.
And now more than ever, but they should have gotten it. Well, right here in Iowa, how many of us voted to have money to devote from our taxes to go to the support of our environment? And where is that sitting?
Right. I forget the name of that initiative. Iowa Labor.
Idols or something like that.
And the legislature has ignored that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so that's what I'm saying. The problems with our democracy are deep.
So Irish democracy was...
Just FYI.
I mean, again, Ireland was occupied by the British for 600 years.
Yeah.
And there were absolutely, violent efforts to overthrow British rule. And, I mean, one could argue that it was, in the end, in 1922, it was a violent uprising that overthrew the British. I would argue that independence was already in progress. I mean, it was 1890 or so that the Irish were finally allowed to own land. And that's when my grandfather, who made some money, or my great-grandfather, who made some money in this country on the trolley lines, I believe, went back and bought land when he was first allowed to do that. And, you couldn't wear green for some stupid reason. You'd be in trouble right now.
Turquoise.
Turquoise, okay, close enough. Yeah, if I was British, I'd throw you in jail. you weren't allowed to speak the Irish language. You weren't allowed, you were required to to, you know, he had a very small holding that you didn't own. You were the tenant, and you were required to pay for your rent, you know, through certain crops. Then you were pretty much, you know, reduced to eating potatoes. And when those went bad because of bad farming practices, you know, 1 million Irish people died. 2 million emigrated. Meanwhile, the British are exporting crops. So, I mean, you know, there were a lot of responses to British oppression that involved noncompliance. Mm-hmm. Basically, oops, I didn't mean to ignore that law, you know. And sometimes, oftentimes, they got away with it. And so is noncompliance, basically in this case, what Armitage is calling Irish democracy, a good way to begin to push back against the slide into authoritarianism? I mean, for example, take the issue of marijuana. There are states that are saying, well, yeah, we're gonna, even though the federal government has a negative view of legalization, we're gonna go ahead and do things that push that issue in the right direction. Even with abortion, there are states that still allow a woman to the right to have that choice.
We do still have states rule.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's all kinds of efforts by the federal government to preempt state authority, and in certain states, including Iowa,
yeah,
you see state government trying to preempt local authority. But there's lots of pushback in ways that involve like just kind of quietly going about doing what you know should be done, doing what you believe in, and sometimes that can be very effective.
Well, I mean, history has shown at least a number of small countries, European countries historically, have been able to maintain a more democratic state against the demands of their own oligarchs by non-compliance. Or workers will sometimes oops on the process of some production.
You got an example?
Well, without naming names.
Right, we don't want to get them in trouble.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, there have been discussions over time with unions and with members of particular industrial sites that say this way of being paid, this way of being driven, this way of being regarded in terms of our needs for time off or, you know, overtime pay or whatever. Well, whoops, I'm sorry, you know, we just cut that whatever a little too short, or we, you know, put a little ding in whatever this product is. I mean, so that's a form of noncompliance as well, and it can be effective. And like I said, historically, we know that at times people were not complying with some of the Nazi laws, and they went about their
sure.
business.
The King of Denmark, when Germany invaded Denmark and required all Jews to wear a yellow star, the king decided to wear one as well.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of Danes, Jewish or otherwise, wore yellow stars.
Yeah,
I mean that kind of resistance. I mean, that's not what defeated Hitler. And again, maybe we disagree on this. I'm not a full-blown pacifist. I can't think of a war in my lifetime that made any sense at all that couldn't have been resolved diplomatically. And in the nuclear age, war makes no sense at all.
No.
But I don't see how you could have stopped Hitler without some kind of military response. Despite great efforts by the King of Denmark and so many other people who were finding ways of...
they killed themselves in a sense. I mean, they weakened themselves by spreading out so far.
The Nazis.
Yeah, the Nazis and being on Russia's border for so long and besieging Leningrad and so far. I think they could only just go so far and with the supporters that they had.
This is an interesting question to me. Do you think Hitler would have collapsed on his own without the Allied invasion?
Eventually, I mean, I think it would have, the timing would have been different, but I think they became so overspread. And then the same with the fall of the Soviet Union. They became so enmeshed in maintaining a very large, very expensive military to the detriment of social needs. And at some point, that also gave way. And I think the same will happen here. Unfortunately, you know how many deaths does it take? How many disruptions does it take before it kills itself, but I think we're on that road again.
And I would argue, too, that the same applies to the British Empire. The British used to brag that the sun never set on the British Empire because they had so much control over so many places in the world. And now I think the most broadly celebrated holiday across the globe is Independence Day from Britain. again, we'll never know about Hitler. Seems like the Soviet Union, yes, you're right, collapsed on having expanded too far. Britain, maybe same thing. And probably other reasons as well.
And but look at us. How many do we have? Somewhere between 700, 850 sites around the world.
You mean military bases?
Yeah, where we're sending equipment, sending people, sending all of the things all of those sites need. Plus, the idea that we're going to redo our entire nuclear arsenal because it needs to be redone. And we're cutting off aid and cutting off partners in terms of trade. I mean, all the way around, we're really stretching the notion of what we can and cannot do. And in the end, if you're destroying your water, if you're destroying your climate, if you're destroying the real workers in our country, i.e. many of whom are not born in this country initially, how far can you go? Hmm. You know, we know American workers don't want to do a lot of the jobs that immigrants had been doing. We know that we're not welcome in many of those bases. And we know that we are creating over and over again nuclear weaponry, whether or not we have a smaller arsenal that we did at the peak back in the Kennedy-Gorbachev era or Reagan era. We still have the most powerful imaginable destructive power, and it's kind of controlled by a very tiny cabal of Trump and friends.
Right. And sometimes the people in control, and I would argue now very much so, are not that stable.
Exactly.
I mean, despite declaring himself a stable genius, I certainly don't see the genius part, and I don't see the stability part either.
No.
And that concerns me. So, I mean, we've had one nuclear power, the USSR, collapse, and out of that, unfortunately, came a new dictatorship under Putin.
Right.
But could we be so fortunate to have a second nuclear power collapse? Maybe it could be China, could be the US, and be spared the horrible possibility that might come out of what would happen to those weapons as political disintegration occurs?
Yeah. I mean, game theory and lots of, you know, crystal ball readers say no. We are really approaching a doomsday scenario if we don't soon turn things around.
Yeah.
And I think that day is coming faster than a lot of people realize. And I mean, not to get really off in the wonky out in Lulu Land. You know, every species
comes. Is that anywhere near La La Land?
Yeah. Every species meets its end. And I think the human species has really destroyed enough of the other life forms and the forms that support life, or the, you know, chemical, physical processes that support life. Is coming, you know, very close.
I don't embrace that, Maureen.
Nobody can embrace it.
Or I don't buy it, but let's put it that way. I think that we certainly have done tremendous damage, and we're continuing to do damage. And we're now seeing some of the biggest, you know, oil and gas producing countries in the world committing to further extraction.
Yeah.
And
not only further extraction, but shutting down any alternatives safe.
Yeah. So that's why it's hard to say that, things aren't great. They clearly aren't great, but I don't know if I'm ready to write the tombstone for
the extinction.
Humanity yet. You know, I think there's still plenty of good in us and plenty of opportunity to pull out of this. And I think, to me, big part of it starts with, finding that common ground. Back to
your march.
Back to rooftops and trash collection, you know, and the guy in your neighborhood with the Trump sign and the solar panels. I mean, I, I think there's opportunity to really pull away from the precipice here. We'll see. I hope I'm right.
Well, I hope you are too. I just don't quite buy it.
Yeah. Yet. Hey, Maury McHugh's with me, folks, today. This is Ed Fallon with the Fallon Forum, and we're gonna take a short, very short break, under a minute here. Come back with more conversation. I want to start off by getting your take on how the carbon dioxide pipeline fight here in the Upper Midwest might impact the 2026 election. I also want to see how deep your love is for billionaires. We're gonna talk about some billionaires.
How deep is your?
Back in a minute, folks, on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village.
Welcome back, folks. Ed Fallon with you here. And thanks to our sponsors, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, Maury McHugh with me today, folks. I want to talk about the stuff happening relevant to Summit's proposed carbon dioxide pipeline and how that is already, I think, having an impact and possibly a national impact on the 2026 election. And I also want to talk about billionaires.
Okay.
Because we love billionaires.
Yeah.
Okay. But
I just wanted to say one little thing.
Okay.
Because we talked about nuclear threat. We didn't say the word nuclear abolition, and we're now about to talk about Summit, which is a climate and environmental issue, and you haven't mentioned PSR, and these are both our big issues, is nuclear abolition. We work very hard. We have a lot of very expert people working on nuclear issues and the treaty and on back from the brink in terms of how to get rid of support for nuclear weapons, and we also work very hard on climate and environment.
Right. And PSR is Physicians for Social Responsibility.
Yes.
So the situation with the Summit Carbon Pipeline is really taking some interesting twists. The Iowa Utilities Commission required the company Summit not to proceed with any further development in Iowa until North Dakota and South Dakota are on board. They're not.
They're not. They're fighting each other.
And for now they're fighting, and now North Dakota, the Attorney General of North Dakota is now coming after
South Dakota
because South Dakota won't allow eminent domain to be used to build the pipeline. That pretty much kills it in South Dakota. And for those who don't know Upper Midwest geography, you can't get to
North Dakota.
You can't get from Iowa to North Dakota where they want to bury the CO2 without going through South Dakota.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess you could even go around to Minnesota. You could go all the way around. No. I mean, it's not very practical.
Yeah.
So it's causing all kinds of issues here. and so Summit is saying, okay, we want a new plan. We don't want to have to worry about North Dakota and South Dakota because we have other ideas on where we can sequester the carbon.
Yes.
What is that about, Maureen?
Well, that's about scary. The whole thing is about scary. First of all, two monocultures across an agricultural state that has a long history of deep ground deliciousness for growing all sorts of things is now only growing for automobiles, for airplanes, and for confined animals.
You're talking about corn and soybeans.
I'm talking about corn and soybeans, yes. And yes, that's what our current...
It's what farm policy encourages.
This is what our economy is based on. Yeah. However, the two of them are destroying both our climate and our water sources. And the idea that we can just forever produce these very products that they want to put in a pipeline, which nobody has shown is ultimately safe, to send to some place that no one knows will be safe for millennia, because you can't put this trash that they're making into the ground without eventually threatening our water source, which is already so degraded because of what they're doing above ground. The whole thing, to me, is absolute nonsense.
Right, and I think a lot of farmers are seeing that. Even corn farmers are seeing that. Ostensibly, I think some had believed that, well, corn farmers are going to love this because it's going to make it easier to, you know, grow corn for ethanol. It's going to expand the ethanol market and make it more lucrative to grow corn. A lot of farmers aren't buying it.
Yeah.
But now here, because they want the utility commission to say they can proceed without North Dakota, South Dakota. That means to me they're planning on sequestering that carbon somewhere in Iowa.
Right.
And is that your take as well?
Yes, that's a scary take.
Yeah.
Because the kind of research that goes into knowing what's going on so many thousands of feet under the ground has not really been adequately done. And to dig the test wells is not a small process. I mean, I'm not an expert in geology. However, there's plenty of voices saying that we don't know the geology, deep geology. We don't know where the cracks and fissures might occur over time. We don't know its impact on our water tables, which I said are already threatened. And then the idea is that this process to develop the burial of this waste product is related to a whole lot of waste also already going on to our ability to produce food, to our ability to have clean water. And people are fighting over these aspects. Plus, we're losing workers in many of these fields. The whole thing, I mean, I feel like we're talking between Tweedledum and Tweedledee here in terms of reality.
My take is that Summit already has figured out where in Iowa they want to bury this stuff. And I think it's in southwest Iowa. And I don't think that there were some off kind of sidebar comments made at one of the hearings that I spoke at a year or two ago now that implied that there was some investigation going on in southwest Iowa in terms of a storage site. And I think they've got something figured out. So they want to say to heck with North Dakota and South Dakota. We're going to keep this in Iowa. And so this will further concentrate the entire network of pipelines and also further concentrate the risk in Iowa. And I think this is going to, tell me what you think. I think this is going to blow up in the 2026 election. Because right now we have a governor who basically enabled Summit to defeat any requirement that eminent domain be regulated in terms of building this pipeline. You have one candidate for governor on the Republican side, Senator Mike Bousselot, who's been the strongest advocate for Summit. He used to work at Summit.
Yeah.
He's been a strong advocate for the use of eminent domain to build this. You have other Republican candidates who are dead set against it.
Mm-hmm.
You have Democratic candidates who, Democrats for the most part have been like confused and sending mixed messages or even quiet on this. That's starting to change.
none of them have actually looked at the chemistry and at the physics of producing this garbage waste product, CO2, which is destroying our climate, and none of them had looked at what is the geological reality for storing this, why it was originally supposed to go up to North Dakota, is because that's where people had actually put real time and money into learning that geology.
But
this is happening overnight. This is not a fast process.
Do you think storage of CO2 in the area of North Dakota that was targeted would have actually worked?
I think at least it had more to speak for it in terms of the research and the history of looking into the deep ecology. I don't in any way support it going any other, you know, if we're creating trash and we don't want it, why would we give it to somebody else?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the insanity
beginning.
And then you got a nuclear power plant that already was in a flood zone up on the Missouri River that everybody worried what that was going to do.
In which state?
In Iowa, between Iowa and, is it Nebraska that's on the other side, or is it South Dakota that's on the other side? But we also have our...
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people worried about what was that going to do to the Missouri, and it's still there. And then we have coal plants also along the Missouri. Mm. I mean, we are really concentrating the pollution all along the western shore of Iowa, and then add this. I mean, this, we're not going to have people here. We're just going to have pollution, because you can't live if you can't rely on the climate, if you can't rely on the water, if you can't
like
rely
the,
on...
Kind of like the upper Midwest equivalent of Louisiana's Cancer Alley.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
so,
really.
So, you know, looking at the 2026 election, the conventional wisdom has been that Democrats have a good chance of controlling the House, and you know, I'm an independent. I'm critical of both parties, but I think having a divided government might be a good thing right now. And so, if Democrats controlled either the House or the Senate, that could be a good check and balance on the Trump administration. And again, conventional wisdom, they have the best shot at regaining the House more so than the Senate. And now we see Trump and Republican governors around the country gerrymandering. It's never happened before. It's every 10 years you have, you know, new districts, and that's when the gerrymandering unfortunately often occurs. Now they're doing it halfway. And in response, you got California redistricting to create new Democratic seats. But that's not a battle Democrats are going to win. Republicans are going to create more Republican seats through gerrymandering.
It doesn't matter. They're taking away the right to vote, for Christ's sake.
Oh, I know. It does matter, and you're right.
in the end, if you knock out a whole lot of the electorate, I mean, that's already such an assault on so-called democracy. I mean, democracy at the very least depends on people being able to vote.
What happened in South Dakota was pretty interesting last election. South Dakota, much more Republican state than Iowa. The Republican incumbents who were supporting the pipeline were knocked out in big numbers, replaced by Republicans who are fierce defenders of the right not to have your land taken through eminent domain. And that, to me, is an indication of just how powerful this issue is. And I think it has the potential to be very powerful here in Iowa, where, again, we don't have gerrymandering. That's one thing we have going for us. We have
so far so good.
We have four four congressional districts that are
pretty much
none of them are shaped like salamanders or amoebas.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree.
And so one of them is not competitive. It's pretty solidly Republican. The other three could go and have gone either way. And I think there's a chance that you might see this issue play a key role in influencing how those races turn out, and that could be a very deciding factor in terms of what happens to the U.S. House, despite the gerrymandering going on in red states. What do you think?
I can't exactly argue with you. I mean, my training is in public health and human rights, to argue about what puts the balance in electoral politics. I mean, I still think that things like support for childcare and a good education, I mean, that's in some ways also at the bottom of all this. The less we educate people, the less they know what's going on.
Yeah.
The more we confuse everything, the less ability I think I have to predict how people are going to react because their influences have been so degraded by our educational system, by our media, and so on. But I do think this is an ultimately very important issue that people really have to know about it, but it's not one that catches the attention of anybody other than farmers.
Well, no, I think it catches more. I mean, a lot of people in the upper Midwest have connections to folks who are affected by it. I think it's huge. And I think, so you mentioned the importance of education and healthcare, and I think we've seen a lot of cuts to the programs that support those programs. A lot of funds that have been cut to those programs. And meanwhile, the billionaires are getting richer. There was a great story out about that the combined wealth of the 400 richest people in the U.S., $6.6 trillion. That's more than $1 trillion greater than it was last year.
I know. It's...
Wow. So, I mean, it's not...
Mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is mind-boggling. And it's also... I mean, who was it who said that you can't have both, a democracy and a country where you've got tremendous income inequality?
Yes. I mean, with such inequality and then efforts to block people's ability to vote, efforts of people's ability to get information, all of these things...
Yeah.
And that's what they would like, because they would like to continue to control in so many ways.
Yeah.
And that's what the pipeline struggle is about.
Yeah, it's about control and about wealth.
Yes.
And again, I don't think Summit would not even be trying to build this pipeline if it wasn't for the public subsidies it's getting through the 45Q tax credits.
No, that's a whole other discussion about the tax benefit to pushing these very destructive technologies.
I just don't know why any voter would get excited about supporting anybody who is in favor of exacerbating the income inequality crisis. And certainly with 400 billionaires controlling $6.6 trillion, up $1 trillion from last year, that should be a red flag for everybody.
Yeah.
Hey, Maureen, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Maureen McHugh, folks, educator, physician, activist, and an all-around deep thinker that I always appreciate having on this program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, when we come back from a short break, my honey's coming on the show, Kathy Burns, and we're going to be talking about honey and whether it is indeed the panacea that it is sometimes claimed to be. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. Welcome back to the program, and with me to talk about honey is my honey, Kathy Burns.
Hey, hey.
Anyway, so... there was. We get people asking this all the time. A couple women walking by the other day, curious about what we do, and one of them was wondering if there was honey available, and mentioned. And again, we hear this from a lot of people too, that local honey is good for controlling allergies, and I've often thought that sounds like it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you dug a little deeper and have learned some things that are of interest.
Right, because sometimes you hear something over and over, and suddenly you go, wait a minute.
Is that true? Like last week we talked about whether the vitamins in the vegetables or fruits are really in the peel. And it just depends what vitamins you want.
What kind of
peel you're looking at.
Right.
So I looked at some studies and I will say that pretty much that, I don't want to call it an old wives' tale. That seems a little derogatory, but that saying doesn't seem to stand up to science. Here's what people think, you know, what they're using, to explain the phenomenon. They're thinking local pollens cause people with allergies to sneeze, get itchy, running noses and that kind of thing. And some common treatments for allergies do involve exposing the body to small amounts of the allergen to regularly trigger the immune system so mm-hmm. that they'll be ready to handle larger doses of that allergen during peak seasons.
Kind of like an inoculation.
Right. So in spring, we've got tree pollens. Summer, we've got grass pollens. Fall, we've got weed pollens, mostly ragweed. So a lot of people have extrapolated that idea to apply to pollen allergies, believing that small doses of pollens via honey collected by local bees is similar to medical immunotherapy. In other words, you're ingesting the local pollen, so you're getting immunized against it.
I've thought that made sense, but you dug into some of the scientific studies, and they kind of have a different story.
Right. Several reasons. One study in particular by the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology found or discussed several things. That one, most of the pollens that cause you trouble from plants that are pollinated via the wind are the problem. They're not, the pollens that give you problems are not coming from flowering plants. And that's what the bees are collecting when they go get the nectar. The study says, quote, the only way this type of allergic pollen would end up in honey is if it were wind blown into the hive or onto the flowers.
That would be a huge long shot.
That's a long shot.
Yeah, real long shot.
Another point made by this academy is that honey is made from the nectar that bees gather with a very little bit of pollen that happens to be in it.
Yeah, because the bees are primarily after nectar, the liquid portion of
they do use the pollen once they get it back to the hive to make bee bread for feeding the babies.
Yeah. But it's an afterthought.
But there's a tiny bit in the honey. So clinical studies show that the low dose of grass pollen you get in honey isn't sufficient to trigger an immune response. And one more point out of many is the study also points out that many people suffer from allergic reactions due to allergies from all kinds of different sources simultaneously, pet dander, mold, dust mites, etc. And there's no reason to expect that honey would help with these.
Where's that study from?
That was discussed by the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, as mentioned. Yeah.
And being a good researcher, you've done more than one dig here.
Well, I did lots of digs, and it was just not scientifically viable comments like that. One study published by the National Institutes of Health indicated a correlation between people who paired high doses of honey with their regular allergy medicines, and they reported better control of their allergies in general. So for the study, 1 gram of honey was taken per kilogram of body weight. So for me,
1 gram per kilogram of body weight.
So I weigh about 58 kilograms.
Okay.
That would be about 58 grams of honey by weight, or approximately 3 tablespoons of honey a day.
Okay.
And I'm happy to eat 3 tablespoons of honey a day.
Yeah, reduces to a type of measurement that Americans can relate to.
Yes.
Maybe someday we'll all be able to relate to grams and kilograms. But yeah, tablespoon, I know what that is.
A tablespoon.
Yeah. So, the bottom line is, I guess, it's really, there's no correlation between honey consumption and improving your immunity to allergies. But there are definitely reasons why we want to eat honey.
There are. We do see in research that honey over sugar has antioxidants and antimicrobial benefits. You do want to watch out not to give honey to children under the age of one because of the risk of botulism. But by golly, honey is delicious.
Yeah. And just for the record, we are not medical professionals.
That's true.
But neither is RFK Jr., for what that's worth. Hey, thanks, Kathy. Thanks to our guest today, Maureen McHugh, and to our production team of Sherry Hardina, Forrest Detterman, Charles Goldman, Kathy, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, real estate agent Joe Henry, and Architecture by Synthesis. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. And finally, thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.